Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to this chapter of Turn the Page, Syosset Library's podcast. I am Evelyn Hershkowitz, Rita Services Librarian, and so have, I'm going to let Donna Berger, also Rita Services Librarian, introduce our very special guest, Susie Yang. So Donna, take it away.
Okay. Susie Yang was born in China and came to the United States as a child. She has since lived in 14 countries across three continents. After receiving her doctorate of pharmacy from Rutgers, she launched a tech startup in San Francisco that has taught 20,000 people how to code. She has studied creative writing at Tin House, Sackett Street, and the 92nd Street Y. She has lived across the United States, Europe, and Asia, and now resides in the UK, but currently is in Istanbul. White Ivy, her first novel, has been longlisted for the Center for Fiction's First Novel Prize, chosen as the November 2020 Read with Jenna Today Show selection, and listed as a recommended November release by podcaster Zibby Owens on Good Morning America. Welcome, Susie. Thank you for joining us on Turn the Page. For our listeners who may be unfamiliar with White Ivy, can you tell us a little bit about the novel and what inspired you to write it?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me here. So White Ivy tells the story of Ivy Lin, a Chinese American immigrant. And we follow her from when she's 14 years old to 27. As a child, Ivy falls in love with a boy named Gideon Speyer, who is the son of a Massachusetts state senator. As adults, Ivy and Gideon reconnect, and essentially the book follows Ivy on this path to win Gideon's heart, and she lies and manipulates and schemes her way into marrying to his family, who is very different from her own. What inspired me to write the book, actually, I always knew I wanted to write an anti-hero character, and the first line of the novel kind of came to me out of the blue, which is, Ivy Lin is a thief, but you would never know it to look at her. And once I had that line, the character of Ivy came to me quite fully formed. And I kind of saw the whole vision of the novel, and I always knew the lengths that Ivy would go to get what she wanted. And then it took me the year to write the novel.
Wow, that's quick, a year. That's amazing. So tell us the journey that it took. First of all, let's go back. You weren't an author originally.
No.
Startup company, you have a doctorate in pharmacy. I mean, you're very well established in that business. What made you decide to go into writing this book?
So I've always loved writing. I've, you know, been a writer and I've journaled ever since I can remember, but I always thought of it as a hobby. I come from, you know, Chinese American background. So it was kind of instilled in me that, you know, I would go to school, get a traditional degree, get a job. But I did a 6-year pharmacy program at Rutgers University, and I did that straight out of high school. So essentially I was committing to doing this very professional degree, but without understanding even what a pharmacist did for a living. And by the time I understood that, I was halfway through the degree and I hated it. So I thought, let me at least get the degree. You know, it's a little bit late now to back out. But right after I graduated, I moved to San Francisco to work in tech, because that was still a really viable career path that was, you know, quite normal to get a job and work in. And then when I was in San Francisco, I launched a whole bunch of failed startups before launching BaseRails, which I worked on for 3 years before writing White Ivy. And the inspiration for kind of turning into a writer was really, I call it my quarter life crisis. I thought, oh, what is it that I really want to do? Is working in tech and running the startup what I want to commit to? And I thought, no, I really want to pursue writing full time and see if I can do it. So when I say I gave myself the year, it really was kind of do or die for me. I thought if not now, I have to kill the dream of becoming a writer or prove to myself that I could do it.
Wow. Congratulations on that then. You know, we've spoken to so many other authors and your path was amazing, that how quickly that you were able to get such a great novel. My question to you is, what was it like when you got that phone call from Jenna Bush's Hager's staff saying that they picked it for their November pick?
Oh, it was surreal. I got the email from my editor, and she, I think we just went back and forth, and I described it like being struck by lightning. Because it feels, especially in this, you know, in this year where it's been so hard to, you know, I mean, everybody's at home and it feels like to even kind of just get discovered this year as a debut novelist is so, you know, so hard and so rare. So I think a chance for like a person like Jenna to kind of advocate for debut novelists like me is really, it feels amazingly lucky actually.
Have you spoken to Jenna yet, or that's going to be at the end of the month?
That's scheduled for the end of the month.
It's so exciting. I mean, to get picked for that. I mean, I love Jenna Bush-Ager. I think she's great. The books she picks always seem to be great books. So congratulations on that. I couldn't be happier for you.
Thank you.
So we've read, Donna and I have read White Ivy and we loved it. It's such a great story. Is Ivy based on anyone you know?
Is she me? No.
Good. I'm glad she's not you.
No, Ivy really came to me. I know this sounds so strange, but she really came to me really fully formed. Even that first, I wrote the first chapter in a day. So the first sentence came and then the whole first chapter came to me. Her family, the way she walks, you know, that shoplifting scene at Kmart. And that really became the bedrock for the novel. So even as I was, you know, writing into the later parts of her adulthood, I would always come back to chapter one, because that was really, for me, the formation of Ivy's character. I think the reason why she came to me so fully formed is because I love really manipulative, you know, kind of social climbing characters. So one of my favorite books is Vanity Fair. So you always think Becky Sharp, you know, you think Scarlett O'Hara. So just characters like that, I'm so fascinated with, and it's so interesting to watch their kind of destructive personalities and having them face the consequences of that. And so when I thought, what kind of book do I want to write? It was always going to be along those veins. And that's why, yeah, so I wouldn't say at all that, you know, Ivy's based on me or anyone I know. It just, she just kind of sprung to life for me on the page.
I really loved that you put her saying, she said that the library was one of her favorite places and that that's where she shaped her aspirations, and she filled in the details, because I can totally see someone who's coming from a background that's not traditional American. If you read lots of novels, you definitely come up with someone like Gideon as your ideal man. And it rang so true. And what has been your experience with libraries as, you know, someone who came here from China and, you know, obviously had to learn language, et cetera?
Yeah, I love that line. And that was absolutely drawn from my life. You know, when I was a kid, I remember we would get these Scholastic. Do you guys remember the Scholastic mm-hmm. book orders?
The best.
They're the best. And all yes. of my friends got them and they would check off everything. And my parents were like, nope, we're not going to waste money on books when you have the library. Yeah. And so because of that,
I got a treat, but not too often.
No, I never did. And so even today I have like a compulsive book buying problem because it feels like such a luxury to me. But yeah, growing up, I would always just go to the library, and the limit, I lived all over the East Coast. And I remember being in Baltimore and Delaware, and we would go to the library and the limit was 30 books. And so I would always check out 30 books.
Oh my God.
And I would read them. And I'm such a rereader too. So I'll read them back to back. And I remember kind of informing the impressions of what the American dream was. I was a huge Sweet Valley fan. You know, you have these blonde, blue-eyed twins. I loved, you know, V.C. Andrews. I read everything. I read Lord of the Rings, obviously Harry Potter. So it really was just, it was a place where I think that completely populated my imagination growing up. And I really put that detail for Ivy, because I really wanted to give her that kind of immigrant background of, you know, kind of even understanding what it is to aspire for in America. That was really informed by books for her as well.
I thought that was a great bunch of details. And I have a question about the cover. I think the cover is just so beautiful. And so did you have any input into that, or did they just show that to you?
So my editor sent me, I think it was 5 really different covers from the art director, Jackie, at Simon & Schuster. And to be honest, I really loved all of them, but they were really different. And one of the ones was this black and white cover, but it was a different woman in the beginning. And we all really liked that cover, but we thought it was a little bit too historical fiction because her pose was a little bit different and she had like short hair. But because the feel of it, the black and white image with the splash of color was really appealing to all of us. I think she came back to me maybe after 3 iterations with this current image and the font. And then that became the cover we all liked. So I gave feedback on it, but it was really just trying to make sure that you know, the cover pleased so many people, you know, me and the Simon & Schuster and the buyers and, you know, the readers. So it took a few iterations.
Yeah, no, it's great. Did you have a tour planned or anything? I mean, was that in the works before we all got shut down, or was that not even taken care of at that point?
I think because when we started talking about, you know, marketing and publicity, it was already March, you know, February. Oh, okay. So it really did feel like wait and see. I actually prefer these types of calls because I'm such a homebody and I'm such an introvert. So it feels a lot less taxing to just, you know, be my own home and do this. And plus people can now dial in. So I feel like, you know, there's trade-offs to this kind of podcast versus in-person events.
Right. Like, I mean, you don't have the experience being your debut novel. So many authors we've spoken to, they're used to being on the road and around and out there. And they also say this is so much better for them. They don't have to they miss the travel, some of them, but they are also, a lot of them say they are introverts also. So they're happy just sitting in their home.
Yeah. I think this is probably universally better. Yeah.
Well, hopefully next novel. And I'm sure you're working on something great also.
Thank you. I'm trying.
What did you want readers to take away from reading White Ivy?
I think when I wrote it, I just wanted to write something I wanted to read. So genuinely, I really just hope it's entertaining and I hope it's immersive. That's really important. When I was writing it, I thought I want this to be something that, you know, really feels real to the reading experience. You know, you don't want to turn away. You feel very involved in Ivy's head. So yeah, just for people to kind of draw their own conclusions. You know, everyone feels very differently about Ivy. Everyone has their own take on her choices. Just having people, you know, be immersed, and hopefully they can learn a little bit about themselves by their own reactions to Ivy's choices. I feel like I like books that always kind of force me to ask what I would do in that situation. So hopefully Ivy's choices force readers to think about that themselves.
Right. Well, we don't want to give anything away because there's a lot of twisty turdy things that are going on. So we want all of our listeners to pick up a copy of White Ivy. We do have it here in the library. It is available on Overdrive also. I am listening to it as well as reading it at the same time. And the narrator is fabulous. Have you listened to the audiobook?
I have, not the whole thing, but I listened to the first chapter. Yeah, she's amazing. I love her voice, Emily.
Yes, no, she's so great. Did you have a choice in who the narrator was? Did they send you
They sent me different clips. And then I just love her voice, you know, and the way she reads. It's so great.
Yeah, no. Do you listen to audiobooks normally? Is that one of your modes of reading?
I've started to. I didn't used to. I was always a much more visual person. It's not so much audio, but now with especially, you know, eight, nine months into COVID, I'll listen to anything. I'll just have it playing in the background. I listen to podcasts now. I feel like the content I'm consuming is, and maybe everybody else too, is changing a little bit. I want something relaxing and kind of just, you know, that will something to just focus on, because I feel like everybody's attention span is crazy these days too.
I have a question about the title. Did you come up with that? Because I think her name obviously is part of the title, but the title has so many different levels of meaning, or at least to me it did. And then you have the extra little cover piece, that torn page. I just see it resonating on so many different levels. What came first, her name, the title?
Her name always came first. So actually the working title was Let Us Not Ask for Gold. And that came from a quote that I had liked, which is, love is enough, let us not ask for gold. And it's very tongue in cheek because, you know, obviously for Ivy, love is not enough. But I think midway through the editing process, my editor thought I didn't capture more of the darker elements of the story. And so we kind of went back to brainstorming, and we went back and forth a lot. I must've come up with, you know, dozens of titles. And then I struck on White Ivy because I was playing around with her name, which I also felt was quite evocative. And then there's, you know, the allusions to the plant and the climbing vine. So, and then the White Ivy came to me because of the proverb, which is included in the book, the snow goose need not bathe to make itself white. So that's how I came up with White Ivy. And it was just so perfect because it's exactly like you said, it speaks to so many levels of meaning. Race, legitimacy, you know, inherent values versus exterior, you know, appearances. So everyone felt like that really captured the feel of the book.
Yeah, I think it really is one of the best titles this year because it just so totally captures Hush. And I even Googled White Ivy because I was like, and I saw the plant and I'm like, oh, I have that. That's the one that's really hard to get rid of and sticks really. And it's like, that's her.
Oh, I didn't know that was a real plant. That's so funny.
Yes, there is a
white ivy. Oh, wow.
It really did. Good. It was good.
Thank you.
How did your traveling and as a young kid to so many different places influence you to write her character?
I mean, at the most literal level, I think it just sets the book in so many different places. You know, the book is set in outside of Boston in New Jersey. There's a section in China, and then we go back to Boston. So I think that really reflected my experience, which was always, it felt like every few years, you know, I had to relearn my social environment and adjust a new place. And I didn't even consciously make that decision to set the book in so many different places, but it just naturally came out. So I think that's one way it's influenced it. And then the other way it comes through is probably just Ivy's feeling of otherness. For me, it was always, you know, adapting to my new environment, not really feeling like I belong in one culture, one place. And I think that feeling of looking to belong somewhere really comes through in Ivy's personality as well. Even when I'm writing now, you know, working on new stuff, I find myself kind of drawn to the same, you know, the desire to sort of set the book in different places, because that's really reflective of how I've lived my life.
Did you live in Boston at all? Was that one of the places you've lived?
I didn't. So I met my husband.
Oh, so why did you pick Boston?
Yeah, people ask this. So I met my husband in high school and he went to college in Boston. So I would go visit him all the time. And then, but really it was a story decision to set it in Boston because of the Spire family, there's something that's really, you know, New England about them. I considered very early on setting it in New York where I was living, but I thought, oh, there's so many great books already that kind of talk about, you know, that New York society. So I thought, let's set it in Boston. It was really a story decision.
What was your research like for the book?
Oh my gosh, I hate research. I did minimal research. I think the research was limited to like road names and you know, landmarks, but I wouldn't say I researched much of, yeah, not that much else, I would say. It was mostly just pulled from my imagination.
So what did you know about a senator's son?
That detail was added. I mean, it was added in quite early, but that detail came to me because when I was a freshman in high school, one of my really good friends, he was a senator's son, and I just felt like, oh, that's a cool, you know, that's a cool detail, and it gives a kind of like authority to the Spears family that I felt like Ivy would be really impressed by. You know, they're not just a normal, you know, neighborhood family, but they're important people in America. So it's a small detail, but I feel like it really did influence the way that Ivy had always viewed Gideon and his family as a little bit different and more important than her other peers.
Yeah, the scene when her whole family goes and takes her out of Gideon's house was unbelievable.
Yeah, really very awkward.
Right. That really showed a lot about both cultures. And
I think really... the book is very cinematic. I mean, you see the things happening as you're reading it. Have you had any expressed interest from film companies or Netflix and those TV producers to adapt this at all?
Yeah, so actually in June, this was optioned by Netflix.
Congratulations.
To be produced by Shondaland. So that was—
That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. I wasn't sure at what point, you know, we could share the news, but it's public now. So that was another, you know, huge up, you know, through this tumultuous year of ups and downs.
Wow, did you know at that point in June that it was a Jenna pick?
No.
When did she contact you? How long a process is that?
I think I found out about the Jenna pick, I want to say September.
Okay, not that long ago.
Yeah, not that long ago. Maybe in late August, yeah.
Wow, that's, what a year you're having, huh?
Yeah, it really does feel like that, you know, that Dickens quote, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. It's really been that, really, yeah.
So when you were in college, did you take any English classes, or reading for you was just a pastime?
I tried to as much as I could. I mean, English was always my favorite subject, but because it was a pharmacy school, it had, you know, very strict degree requirements. But all of my electives, I took Shakespeare, I took creative writing, I took poetry. So I would try to take as many writing and reading electives as I possibly could in school. But I actually find that I probably enjoy reading the books that I want to read. I enjoy the books that are assigned to me less. I think everybody can identify with that. Yeah.
So what are you reading now? What are some of the current authors that you like?
Let me just take a look, actually. So I'm reading Anita Bruckner, Hotel du Lac. I have that right here, that one. I'm reading D.H. Lawrence. I just discovered him for the first time. So I'm reading The Rainbow. I used to feel really bad about like not finishing a book once I started it, but I feel like there's so many books now. So if I, you know, read a few chapters of one book, I will read another book simultaneously. Whereas before, I would never, you know, stop in the middle of a book. I would always have to finish it.
And what do your parents now think about you being an author?
One of the first questions when I told my dad about publishing What Ivy was, he was like, are you going to write more books? You know, he's like, is this a one-time thing that you just kind of had to do? And I thought, no, Dad, I think I'm going to write books now. No, they're really supportive. I think they're quite used to me living this very like vagabond life. Ever since I was, you know, after college, I've moved around so much too for the startup. And I've lived abroad so many times, even before becoming a writer. And so I think they're used to it. You know, they're always like, where are you in the world? What are you working on? So they're quite supportive. It was a really surreal experience that when he read the book for the first time, I sent it to him and he was reading it and giving me real-time feedback. Like he would text me, I'm on page, you know, 100, and he would make corrections for me. so that was interesting. That was fun.
Are you still involved in the startup company?
No, it's still up. It's called Base Rails, but it's really outdated. The content is very outdated.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're a full-time author now.
Yeah.
So can we get a little hint about what the new book's about?
Yeah, sure. So it follows a romantic couple over the span of around a decade. And it kind of addresses like the public persona versus the private self. It's set also in between the US and Beijing. And a lot of it deals with, you know, the cultural clashes of, you know, the Chinese American culture. And it also kind of tackles the Chinese entertainment industry. I feel like I'm just drawn to really similar themes of kind of identity politics and comedy of manners and, you know, the family cultural clashes. So those themes are still ones that are going to be prevalent throughout the book.
Sounds good. Do you have a deadline?
I hope not. Not that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah, no, just personal deadline.
Okay, it's not going to be like a one book a year deal?
Oh gosh, I hope not. At least nobody has told me. At least no one's told me so far if it is.
Simon and Schuster must be so happy and so happy that they were able to sign you and that they have you as their author.
I hope so, but I really feel like I'm really lucky because I got their support so early on. I mean, really, I feel like if there's one thing I've learned about publishing, it's how many people it takes to not only publish a book, but to even help it find readers, you know, just from everybody, the company. And I think for me, at least really early on, Simon & Schuster had felt, you know, that this is a good book and we want to promote it. And so that's always been, it was such a supportive process, if that makes sense, for my publishers, which I was really grateful for.
Yeah, the marketing also is a whole separate industry for publishing, just getting the word out there. But you know what? How much better than national TV on Meet with Jenna can you get? I mean, you can't ask for
more than that. No.
Right. That's just, you know, that is just the greatest publicity you could possibly get. I'm sure it'll hit the New York Times bestseller list. Have you thought about that?
I have not. I don't even know what goes into that. I think I'm just learning everything as it comes along as well.
I think so many of her books have hit the New York Times bestseller list. So I think you have that to look forward to in the near future. I really think so.
I don't want to get my hopes up, but thank you.
Definitely see that happening. What about you, Donna?
I definitely think it could get there. It's very good. It's well written and such a good story. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I really think it's on its way. And we are so happy that you were able to join us on our Turn the Page podcast from the Syosset Public Library. I'm going to close the chapter on Turn the Page. This has been Evelyn Hershkowitz, Reader Services Librarian. And with us, we also have another one of our Reader Services Librarians,
Donna Berger.
And our wonderful author, debut author, Susie Yang from White Ivy. I'm going to show a copy of the book, not that you're going to be able to see it because this is an audio. Okay, so we're going to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Susie Yang, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We really
you for
appreciate
having
it.
Me.
We look forward to talking to you when your next book comes out.
Thank you. Yes. Thanks, everybody.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.